Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. We're back. I was sick last week. I don't know. It was just Tuesday, though. Isn't that weird? I feel like I needed a doctor's note or something just to prove that I actually was sick. Tuesday just got worse and worse and worse. And then, like, by the end of it, I was like, I got the kids to bed, and I was like, I gotta go to bed.
Yeah. That happens now, I have realized.
Yeah, I was toast. I couldn't sleep. I was just kind of out of it. So I just put something on the TV, and it's funny. I was wearing my AirPods, and I have the Apple TV, and I was watching like an anime or something, and it was playing. And then Ashley came in. It's like, what are you doing? It's just like complete silence, except for my headphones are in. I can hear it, obviously. And it was like one of those moments where it's like voiceover. It happens a lot in anime, I guess, where it's like it's a still shot, but there's a lot of talking going on.
Yeah.
And she's like, why do you have the TV paused? I'm like, no, I'm listening to it. They're describing the scene.
Can't you hear the voices?
Yeah, exactly. Well, she couldn't because I had my headphones.
I know.
But she was like kind of, she just couldn't understand because like I don't normally do that, but I was just so out of it. But yeah, like, and I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and this is how weird it was. Like I was completely out of it, completely sick. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up and it was like 2 a.m. and I roll over and I look at the clock and I'm like, oh man, I feel great. Like I was suddenly better.
Maybe Justin be ready to record now.
No, I went back to sleep, but I just thought it was funny. Cause I was just like, oh, this is good. Tomorrow I'll be back to normal. This will be great. And it was. But then the week got away from us, and here we are. We're back.
Yep, we are. We're back with a couple of different games this week. You've got some Star Wars going on.
That's right. I have gone back to a galaxy far, far away. I should have said a backlog far, far away. Like I know that Jedi Survivor came out last year, last April. I picked it up over the holidays. I think as part of a Black Friday sale. And it's a wild one because, like, I really enjoyed Jedi Fallen Order. We obviously played it for Game Club before Survivor came out. Mm-hmm. And I was very much interested in playing it. And then it launched. It had some technical issues. And I was like, oh, wait for a sale. And I just kept putting it off. And then I bought it and then still put it off. Like, it sat there for 3 months. And I'm finally like, no, we're gonna play this. Because I like Star Wars, I like the Jedi series. It's been very good so far. So I finally booted it up. I'm playing it on Xbox Series X, and I finished it. So I played it for like a couple weeks, and I managed to finish it. It is a big game, but it's not like a 100-hour RPG big game. But it is still a fairly large game. They did the thing that. I thought we were past this. Like, you know how, you know, a certain generation of games came out and they were more linear and they were like sort of focused single player games. And then there was this moment where like everything needed to be bigger, open world, you know, bunch of side quests. And I kind of thought we were past that. Like, I thought maybe that was something that happened from like the PS3 to the PS4 era. And I think we had kind of gotten back to being comfortable with more like linear sort of focused experiences. But no, not the case. The first jarring thing about Jedi Survivor is you realize like this is a big game and that these areas that you explore, specifically one planet at the beginning, which is Kobo. There are actually two planets that are more open world. In the sense that there is a map to explore, and that wasn't present in Jedi Fallen Order. It was more of like there were large areas, but it was a very focused sort of experience, and there were shortcuts between sections on the map. But it was very corridor driven, not a lot of big open areas. Whereas Jedi Survivor has these two planets, Kobo and Jedha, which have these very large open areas where you actually get a mount. Like that's how open they are.
That's how big. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you get a mount and, you know, at first I was like, oh, this is kind of neat. And I was like, oh no, this means there's going to be a bunch of optional stuff sort of scattered around. And sure enough, like specifically in Kobo, you have this area, this common area where you, you know, talk with your teammates and stuff. And they'll like give you rumors like, oh, I heard about this thing happening over in this area. And then this thing will pop up saying like, oh, rumor discovered. I can go check that out if I want. It's all, it's optional stuff. It might lead to like a upgrade or a new weapon or like an additional perk that you can unlock. You can unlock perks in this one that kind of augment the gameplay. So like it's optional, but it feels like, oh, I feel like I should go do this thing. It feels optional, but it's something if I want to enjoy the game, that's where my mind kind of goes, like, oh, but it's in there. I should probably try to go do it. I kind of get lost a little bit sometimes in the side content of these larger games. Until one of two things happen. I either like accept that I'm not going to do everything and put blinders on and kind of focus on the main campaign and kind of
decide that it's time to save the world.
Yeah, exactly. Or just stop playing, you know. I think those are the two ways those are the two paths that I usually find myself facing with this type of issue, specifically for me. So, but I know there are folks out there that like they hear about this big open world game and I'm like, oh sweet, I loved Jedi Fallen Order and all the way that the combat worked, and I am down for just more of that. And there is more of that. There's a lot there, and there's a lot more varied gameplay. So like the first one had like very specific sets of stances that you could have as a Jedi. So you had like a single lightsaber, and then eventually you unlock like a double. And I can't remember if the first one had just one or maybe two stances. It was limited. There weren't many, but this one's like, you know, let's put in six. So there are six different combat styles, including some upgrades to your force powers as well, where you can sort of confuse your enemies and turn them to your side. Like you can tell them to Jedi mind trick them into wanting to help you out. But they add for the stances, they add like the cross guard, which is like the if you watch the new trilogy, it's what's the guy it looks like a knight's sword, but it's a lightsaber. It's got the hilt on it, like the cross guard on it, okay. Made of the lightsaber stuff, and it's more of like a defensive move, more of a slower or lumbering type of, you know, risk reward thing there. But my favorite is where you get a blaster and a lightsaber, which I thought was like really cool. And once I got that, that's all I used for the rest of the game. So I just pumped all of my skill points into that and like my force powers and stuff. And I was just unstoppable for the rest of the game. But yeah, like I struggled a little bit with its open worldness until I decided that like, look, I don't need to fill the garden. You know, I don't need to collect all these seeds and make sure that the garden is well stocked. I can just let it be like and be comfortable with that and not hear every conversation. I sometimes feel like I'm missing out on something if it's there and I don't engage with it. But then it turns like a solid 20 hour experience into maybe like a meandering 40, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have enough time for that, I guess. But I did enjoy it. Like I enjoy it once I got focused on the story. I did enjoy it. One of the issues that you usually have with telling stories within this time frame of Star Wars, like between the original trilogy and the prequels, is that the story is kind of set. You know, like you know that the Empire, even the thing you're fighting against, you're rebelling against, is still going to be around for another 20 to 30 years or whatever. And anything you do is just not going to cut it. Even if the story is set up in a way that's like, hey, this is a big deal. It's like, well, if you've seen the original trilogy, you know, like whatever we do, drop in the bucket compared to what Luke does, you know? And I think the first game kind of suffered from that. And its ending was kind of like a bit of a cop out in the sense it's like, well, we have to have this ending because if we don't, we're going to just end up having to explain it all away in the sequel because, of course, whatever we're dealing with doesn't pop up in the movies.
Yeah, right.
So they kind of address it in this one where a majority of the story is dealing with the High Republic, which is a time that took place before the prequels, hundreds of years before the prequels.
So the High Republic, not the Old Republic.
Exactly, yeah, the High Republic.
So many republics.
Many, they all fall, you know. So. Okay.
Very cyclical.
Look, Ryan and Jocelyn talk about Star Wars. We both don't really have a good understanding.
I know nothing about Star Wars. I've seen all the movies like once.
Yeah. I know like a general... So my knowledge comes from mostly video games and then watching the movies at least once. And I know some folks are like, you know, are feeling pain right now, but we'll get through this together. So yeah, the Old Republic is a BioWare video game, and that's thousands of years in the past when the Jedi were getting started, but there was still the Sith and there were still issues there. And then you have the High Republic, which is like the peak of Jedi society, I guess, and everything's okay. Good, but not really because everyone's like, hey, it's really good. We could do no wrong. That didn't last very long. And then like a couple hundred years later, you have the fall of the Republic, which leads to the Empire. So they kind of like, they bring a character forward from the High Republic and a bunch of scenarios. And again, there's some, like they're trying to find this lost planet of Tantalor, which is like this planet that exists, for lack of a better way of describing it, like it passed a black hole. It's not a black hole, but it's like a, they call it an abyss, but really to me, it's like a non-space person. That's a fancy black hole. And the idea being, you know, if you have a planet that's hidden, you know, we can hide the Jedi. We can, you know, save people from the Empire and all that. And that's kind of the driving force for the story, which I think like does a really good job of being like, hey, we know if we try to focus on the Empire, like our story has to end a specific way or deal with the Empire a specific way that doesn't mess with the movies. So doing more High Republic things, there's like some wiggle room there. And for the most part, the story is really interesting in that regard. The game goes a bit further from there, and I'm not going to go into super spoilers. I know the game came out a year ago, but I did finish it, and I thought that the whole story as a whole was good. Like it was a really good Star Wars story. It didn't mess with, because it's all canon now. It's all like part of the Lucasfilm strategy of like what Star Wars is, and I love that they include the video games within the lore of it all, and like this game doesn't mess with the movies. And you know, when they have conversations of like, could Cal, the main Jedi, show up in the TV shows and the movies, and when they say yeah, of course, like it that feels earned, you know, as long as the character is still alive or makes sense that he is still alive. But The way it ends is, I thought it was a better ending than the first one. It was more satisfying. But this is a middle chapter. Like there's very much like they end this game in a way that's like we want to make a third one. I love how they ended it, where it's like they do this. You know how some open world games are like, this is the point of no return when you finish the game.
Yep.
This is your save and you're going to come back to it. And if you want to clear side stuff, you're basically telling the final boss, just give me a second. I got to go collect all this stuff. I love that this game does the thing where it's like, there is no point in no return. You get on a track and of course you got to finish it out before you can go back to the open world. But the game has like story and lore that takes place after you complete the campaign so that you can continue explore. Yeah, it's my favorite way of doing it. And I mean, the game gets big bonus points for having that in there. I think that's a requirement for me to like really enjoy an open world game, is I need that immersion not to break just because you didn't want to develop past the main story. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to tell a specific story, I get that. But I think Horizon Forbidden West did that as well, and I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Where it just kept going. So, anyways, I'm glad I finished it. I'm a little bummed it took me this long to get to it, but yeah, Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I mean, now we have the long wait for whatever the next one is. It's probably quite a few years away, just considering how big these games are and how long it mm-hmm. takes to make them. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I waited in the sense that I think they were able to polish up some of the performance stuff, but even playing on the Series X, I did notice some visual issues that would pop in here and there, which was a bit jarring, but still had a great time. I enjoyed the story. I thought it was a really well-done story in terms of avoiding the normal trappings of trying to tell a story between trilogies where your end point is determined by whatever Disney exec was in power at the time. So, yeah, like this, I think this works really well. And I really like the characters, like all the characters that Respawn has put together that are original to this game. They're all back to some degree and it's really something. I enjoyed it. It's good Star Wars. There is good Star Wars out there, Jocelyn.
So let me ask you this. Did at any point in Jedi Survivor, did it ask you to connect to servers?
No, it did not. I mean, I was connected to the internet, but the game did not like make me sign a EULA or something. So,
well, I think maybe I need to play Jedi Survivor then, because I was ready to throw my fucking controller in Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League for the number of times I, a single player, had to connect to servers. Like, oh my God. So first of all, I'm going to say, I think that the reviews of Suicide Squad are, in my opinion, I think overly critical. I think that because the Arkham series was so well received that maybe the bar was really, really high. I don't think the game is that bad. And I think that if I knew anyone else playing the game, and then if I could actually use like the multiplayer squad functions without playing with randoms, that like maybe it could be fun and cool. I think that like they basically you can kind of cycle between the four Suicide Squad characters. So you've got Deadshot. Not Deadpool, Deadshot. you've got Harley, you've got King Shark, and you've got Boomerang Dude. And King Shark, I love. Like, not so much his moveset, but just his character and his like voice acting and delivery is phenomenal. Like, it's well written. And I think that like the Batman stuff of all of the DC stuff is probably my favorite. So, you know, they've got very familiar characters. I did at some point in time watch an animated TV show about the Justice League. So I'm like passingly familiar with a lot of DC characters from that. But, you know, you've got like Penguin and there's Green Lanterns in there. Like obviously from Justice League, Wonder Woman and Flash and Batman. Like they're all those kind of familiar characters there. Like there's potential. This game definitely had potential, but like technical issues have really come between me and enjoying this game, which is funny because I went to look for a bunch of reviews because I was like, okay, maybe this is just a me thing. And all the reviews, I felt like they were super duper nitpicky on things that like I wouldn't necessarily consider. Like some of the reviews are giving this like 6 and 7 out of 10. And I'm like, okay, it's not that bad. Like usually you're grading games at like 8, 9, or 10 out of 10. Like, come on, IGN. Those are the only ratings you ever give. So the fact that you're giving this like a 6, like it's not a 6 on your normal scale of 8, 9, or 10. It's a solid 8, but like technical issues, I didn't see anybody else really talking about. And I think it's because I'm playing while also watching Olivia that like I have to turn away sometimes. And if you pause this game for more than like 2 minutes, it doesn't matter what point you are in. like if you're in the middle of a mission or if you're just like navigating the open world or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like you pause the game, you're disconnected from servers. It's probably to, you know, keep people from like, they probably have some sort of like flexible server size or something, and they pay for people based on who's using the servers. Like, I don't know, but it kicks you off so fast. And then I have yet to have it successfully reconnect me, which is so infuriating because like you'll go back into the like I'll go back into the game after being away for like 5 minutes or whatever. I'll come back and then all the audio works. You can navigate the menus, but as soon as you go back like into the game, everything is just like frozen. And it just has this little like connecting to servers thing flashing. I left it for 25 minutes and it never reconnected me. I was just like, this is so frustrating. And it doesn't matter. There are no save points during the mission. So I had to redo the same mission 3 times because I'm like, obviously, like I'm not going to neglect my daughter to finish a Suicide Squad mission. So I'd get like most of the way through, she would need me for something. I would go help her out and then go back to the game and have to restart the mission because I had to fully like force quit the game and come back and redo the mission. It was so frustrating. And like if I was playing it in a different way, if I had, you know, hours upon hours and I could just sit and have a session, then I wouldn't have noticed this issue. And maybe that's what every other reviewer did because I didn't see anyone else mentioning this. But to me, when I'm sitting there playing it and like my squad is full of bots, I'm playing solo by myself and I don't have it opened, like there's no reason for me to have to be connected to servers. This is just absolutely fucking infuriating. Like, yeah. All I want to do is play through and experience the story and like see what's going on, because like the combat is half decent. Like, I mean, really and truly, like they did technically give everybody a different like move set, but they all feel pretty similar, which is probably done so that you can switch between characters without having to relearn all your buttons. But on the flip side of that, it's like, okay, technically Harley is like swinging through the air where like Deadshot is like using a jetpack, but it's the same buttons and a very similar move. Like, so there's not really that much variety. I would say like the actual combat plays a little bit different, but because they went with guns, characters that are supposed to be melee, like dude with shark fur face, like you would think he'd want to be melee so he could go bite the faces off his enemies, or Harley with her, you know, signature bat. Like, they should be melee characters, but they've like created the game like so you basically like don't have much of a health state. You have shields, which kind of canonically makes sense because you have these human characters, except for the giant shark, these human characters taking on like Green Lantern and Superman, and you know, like they're not human, or they're human but super duper ultra enhanced with magic rings. Like, I know not much about comics, but anyways, whatever Green Lantern, I guess it's an alien ring, not magic ring, alien ring. Anyways,
let's unpack this. Like, I don't know much either. It is an alien ring that doesn't like remove it from the category of magic.
There's like one person from each, like one representative for each like race, right? Isn't that how Green Lanterns work? There's like one from every planet or something like that.
Yes.
Once you reach a certain level of some, I don't know.
But I think Superman is susceptible.
Superman is an alien. I know that.
Well, yeah. Yes, he is.
Nailed it.
You got that. He's powered by the sun. But his only weakness is, well, kryptonite. And I thought it was magic, too. Man, we're just going to all the fandoms are going to.
Yeah,
have.
I know, right? Like,
I remember maybe that Green Lantern stuff could affect Superman, which would make possibly. It magic, not kryptonite, even though it is green. I know green equals kryptonite, but there are.
But my point is Harley Quinn is crazy with a baseball bat.
Yes.
Not the same. So they kind of like get around that by giving them these like super powerful shields.
Cool.
So to replenish your shield, you have to shoot your enemy in the legs enough times that they become like vulnerable and there's this like blue fire stuff. Uh-huh. And then you melee them to get them to drop the shield stuff, like this, basically to drop health. So right. You have to do this very specific thing where you're shooting them and then meleeing them, and then you can replenish your health. But like, again, two characters in particular, like less so Boomerang and Deadshot, but, you know, King Shark and Harley specifically, like they feel like they should just be melee characters. And when you're forced into gunplay, it just feels weird. So, and it's Harley and Shark are my two favorite to play. So, like, it kind of reinforces that or like shines a light on that, that it's weird that they're trying to shoot things. But, anyways, I mean, overall, like, I think it has some aspects of what made Arkham great. Like, you've got Riddler trophies and Riddler riddles to go and solve. There's like, a lot of traversal feels kind of similar, although Harley definitely feels a lot like Spider-Man because She's got this like basically right at the very beginning, you break into the the Hall of Justice or whatever, and they have a whole bunch of like Batman's gadgets and stuff on display. And so Harley steals this like bat bot that like flies around. It's like a little drone thing. So she like has a grapple and a swing. And she swings from the bat bot, the drone.
Cool.
So you have to kind of like, you swing and then you have to cut the rope to the drone and then you can grapple and you have to kind of like go back and forth. Like, so your grapple resets your swing and then your swing resets your grapple. So you have to go back and forth. So you can never be too far away from buildings, but the drone like helps you bridge larger gaps. So it is, it's very like, it ends up playing a whole lot like Spider-Man in terms of traversal. So I kind of actually really liked that. It was super fun. But I've really gotten frustrated just with the technical side of things and with it not necessarily working all that well. Like, I wish there was just a switch where I could say, like, I've already set my party to bots only. I don't need to be connected to your servers because like, it's just been so infuriating and really kills what I think could be like, it's a pretty decently written game. Like, the story so far is like pretty simplistic, I guess. It's like basically like Brainiac is here. Brainiac has taken over the Justice League and is controlling Green Lantern and Batman and probably Superman, but I haven't seen him yet. And basically you have to go kill the Justice League. Like, it is very, very straightforward. There's not a whole lot of like, I mean, it's Suicide Squad. They've got bombs in their heads. Like, it's the Suicide Squad story, but yeah, this time you're killing the Justice League. Like, everything you need to know is in the title.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get more, but it's really well written. Like, you can tell that the people who wrote this really like the content, like really like the characters, really like the world. They want to be like witty and funny. And, you know, it does a better job than I thought it was going to be completely honest. Like, there hasn't really been a time yet where I've been like, oh my God, more dialogue. Like, I've been like, okay, yeah, we're telling more story. This is really cool. Like, yes, that is what I can see Harley saying in this situation. Like, this makes a lot of sense. There was a little bit like right at the beginning when they were setting up the whole Suicide Squad thing and putting the bombs in their heads where, you know, it was went a little long. But for the most part, it's been good. It's been snappy. It's been fun, except for this whole connection issue. Like, it's the connection issues really driving me insane and killing the game for me, which is unfortunate because, yeah, I think otherwise there's some definite potential here. And I do want to get further. I do want to play more. I do want to play more and progress the story. But I also find that like the missions are, because it's basically like open world traversal from mission to mission. Like, there isn't a whole bunch to do in the open world other than look for the Riddler trophies. And then every once in a while, you'll just have like, it's kind of like if you've been traversing for too long, you just kind of spawn enemies. It's like the game's like, oh, you've been spending too much time not in combat, so here is a bunch of random enemies for no reason. So like that's kind of, because they just spawn in around you. It's really weird. It's not like you can see, like, you know, in Spider-Man where you'd be like flying around, or not flying, but you're swinging around, and then like there'd be like a high speed car chase below you or something.
Yes. Yeah. Like random crimes that would
yeah,
pop up.
And yeah. It felt organic. It felt like it was supposed to be there. This is literally like you'll just be swinging around the corner and all of a sudden like a sniper will snipe you for no reason. And then like out of purple goo, a whole bunch of bad guys show up. It's just like, okay, come on now. Like it's not organic at all. It feels really contrived.
Right. And that's the thing about Spider-Man, having played Spider-Man 2 last year, and Spider-Man did this as well, is that the crimes that took place, you could ignore them as they were happening on the ground, or they never interrupted your flow if you were trying to get to a specific point. And I think that's kind of a critical fail there, in the sense that like if you're designing an open world game, you don't want to punish the player for choosing to play the game a specific way, you know, especially if the interruption has to be of a quality where you're not going to be like, oh, this is so frustrating. You know, you're already battling servers, and, you know, I think of, you know, just my time with Jedi Survivor, which is a huge game. And oftentimes I'd be like, okay, I'm going to do this one quick thing, and I'm not going to be able to get back to a save point. And you can do with the Xbox, you can basically turn the Xbox off at any given moment. And the game, most games, any game I've booted up on the Series X that is compatible, uses quick resume. So it's like, it saves your state, your game state. And then you turn your Xbox back on and suddenly you're there, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, the Switch has this with sleep mode. The PS5 has this with, you know, rest mode. And I like, that's just how I want to play. And I think when you have a game that relies on a connection to a server for whatever reason they want to offer, whether it's matchmaking or server AI or what have you, it removes what I think to be the best feature of playing a game on console, which is the control to allow you to like take over your time, like not have to worry about like, oh, I gotta quit out here real quick. And Suicide Squad kind of sounds like, I was playing Honkai Star Rail a couple weeks ago, and we talked about it here. It's a mobile game, and you're constantly connected to the server. There's a little like ping meter top right of the screen, and that makes sense. It's a mobile game, it's free to play, there's an expectation there. But for a console game to not have sort of a fallback offline mode, that's pretty frustrating, especially if, you know, you're a type of gamer that needs to walk away, you know, has 20 minutes and wants to accomplish something and not have to yell like, I'll be there in 10 minutes, I can't pause it. It's like, there's nothing more frustrating than that. And that's like an immediate, well, like, especially, okay.
Yeah. Like where I'm playing it in a single player fashion, and I've told it not to matchmake it. Like, 'cause I'm pretty sure this is a very similar like game and system to the one that you played a while back, the Avengers game,
right?
Where like you've got the squad, and yeah, like you can fill it with friends, or you can let the computer play the bots for you and whatever, and you can swap between characters and stuff. It seems like Suicide Squad is very, very similar to that setup.
Yeah, but Avengers had like an offline mode. You could
play that's
it.
What I mean. Like, So I found it incredibly frustrating. And incredibly frustrating, because I feel like this game could have a lot of potential. Like, it's definitely not up there with the Arkham series, but like it could be its own thing and it could be pretty good. And I feel like it's just so much of it has just killed my enthusiasm for this game. And it's really too bad, because like I say, the characters are really well voice acted. The writing's really good. But yeah, the mechanics is just not the greatest. And the missions are like, missions have been pretty repetitive so far and kind of short. It's like there was one mission I did where there was like this like armored van and you had to go like rescue the other operatives. And so like they were basically hiding in buildings around the van. And so like you had to go like building to building, kill all the enemies, rescue the dude in what it was essentially a Pokeball. And then like you literally it had magical shrink technology and it was a ball that you would like open up and like capture the soldier and then take the ball back to the bus and then make them big again. it was a Pokeball for soldiers.
That's a Pokemon. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like I did that and you just had to go to there was the first soldier at the first building and then the second soldier at the second building and the third at the third, like, and it was just, you did it four times and that was the end of the mission. And then the other missions I've done have mostly been kill a bunch of dudes and you kill a bunch of dudes and then you're done. And like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like the mission design is that like imaginative, and they're pretty short. I think the missions take like, I'd say about 10, 15 minutes probably. So like having to totally redo missions so far, knock on wood, hasn't been the total end of the world. It's just been more frustrating than anything else. But like at least I'm only having to redo 15 minutes worth of content, not like an hour's worth of content. Oh God, if I had to redo an hour's worth of content, I would just uninstall the game. But yeah, it has potential, but like I say, it feels like you're punished a little bit for exploring because of the random bad guys that just show up. But then the one thing that I really want to do is like explore and try to find like the Riddler stuff. So yeah, I don't know. Overall, I would say like, I don't think it's as bad as reviews make it out to be. I think if you're into this like DC universe, it's probably worth checking out. The combat can be really satisfying. And I think once you pick a character that you kind of gel with their play style, then, you know, like it can be really fun and kind of like high adrenaline, crazy, ridiculous. Like it can be really fun. And they do encourage you to like try out all the different characters, because there's like, depending on the mission that you choose, a different character will be like fired up for it. So like, there's one point of time where I was going to go do a mission and then King Shark like came over the radio and was like, Ms. Waller, I just want to say I think I'm ready for a leadership role and I think I can really take the team far if you just give me a chance. And it was so, like, he was quote unquote fired up. And so when you switch to that character for that mission, then you get like huge mega bonus XP. So it kind of gives you an incentive to not just stick to the same character all the time. But then at the same time, it can feel like a detriment if you're like, no, I just want to play Harley. I like how she plays. I like the build I have and the weapons I have for her and whatever. And then it's like, well, if I do play Harley, I'm not going to get the bonus XP. So like you can kind of look at it either way. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's not as bad as reviews have made it out to be, but it definitely has its pain points. I'll put it that way. It's not up to the bar that Batman set. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a question. I'm curious, like what I gathered from what I saw of it, my main worry, like aside from server stuff and always online, I know sometimes those bullet points are enough to have people walk away and not even look at it. And that's fair. I think that's fair. And you can not play a game and still let other folks enjoy it. I think that's also fair. And no one in our Discord is guilty of that. But I know across the social media universe, like there was a week or two of like just a lot of people wanting to play this game and just having to deal with the other side of like folks being like, no, it's not the Arkhamverse. They did this and posting. I think I got spoiled for like every single thing that happened to the Justice League. So that was fun. But my question was about the game is that I get the sense, and maybe I'm wrong, because again, I haven't played it. So I'm curious, does it feel like you are running that treadmill of gameplay to get to the next cutscene, you know?
Yes, because
you have all these big
100%.
Okay,
it's like mission cutscene, mission cutscene, mission cutscene.
Right. And the draw here is that obviously you have every major DC character interacting, maybe not in the way you want to see, you know, evil Superman, yes, evil Batman.
Yeah, because they are evil. Yeah.
Yeah. But the spectacle of those characters interacting with each other for the first time in the Arkhamverse, like, it kind of seems like you are progressing through these missions and there's dialogue happening back and forth and it's, you know, mixed up a bit as you go, like most, you know, service games. But yeah, like it sounds like that my, I don't want to call it fears, but more like concerns that it would be just this thing of like, and then if you didn't like the combat, it makes that whole point even worse, right? Like, yeah. I'm sure it's something you have to play to determine if you're going to enjoy it, the combat wise, as opposed to like, cause the way you describe it, like having to shoot the weak point until you can go up and hit a button to initiate like a kill sequence or whatever, mm-hmm. or knockout sequence or what have you. But like,
the counters are weird too. Cause you have counters like you did in Batman, but instead of it being melee, it's shots. So you have to do a counter shot, which is like, you hit the bumper instead of the trigger, and like, I don't know, it just like the combat doesn't flow as well or as nicely as the Batman stuff did. And obviously it's a difference between being a shooter and being melee, but still, like, I mean, if you liked Batman, you probably will not like this because they are not the same. But that's not to say that it's necessarily bad. It's just different, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a shooter. It is a shooter, and I'm usually not a huge fan of shooters. So, I mean, they do a lot to try to make the shooter interesting, at least. And there's a lot of different, like, animations and stuff. But like I say, like, the animations may be different, but the results is pretty much the same, regardless of what character you play. So maybe that's just because I'm not far enough in the game yet to kind of get, like, totally kitted out and make the characters distinct. And like I say, I also have a couple characters that I've definitely gravitated towards, whether it's for, you know, their moves or for their characters, you know, but there's two I like playing and two I don't like playing. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's okay. It's good. If you like DC, then I would give this a try, because I think that, like, especially if you're not like me and you don't have a kid that you are constantly responsible for, if you can sit down and server issues aren't a thing for you, then, yeah, like, give this a try. But, I mean, yeah, if you're looking for another Batman, this is not another Batman. Right. This is its own thing, you know, to its credit and detriment.
Yeah, because it is a continuation of the Arkhamverse. Like, it's same Batman, yeah. Same universe. And I know that for me personally, who enjoyed the Arkham trilogy and the side stuff as well, I did some spinoffs that, you know, Rocksteady doesn't like to look at, but now it's kind of like, well, maybe those weren't so bad. You now have this that continues that story and obviously, you know, does some stuff with the larger universe that is hinted at in the Arkhamverse, but now we get to see it and see mm-hmm. these characters. Like, they were never going to make a Arkham, you know, 4. So,
yeah,
but I almost wonder, like, could you have done, like, so you played the Arkhamverse, like, is there enough of a reason here to continue the Arkhamverse with this game? Or could it have just been Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, its own story?
I mean, it could have been its own story for sure. There's this section right at the very beginning where you kind of walk through the Hall of Justice, and there's this whole section about Batman, and it kind of like walks you through the trilogy, basically.
Oh.
And there's like all of the, it's like you're walking through a museum, and so you can like push all the buttons on all the bad guys, and it explains like what their role was in Arkham and like what ended up happening. And, you know, you have to kind of like walk through the city, and, you know, you get to see / experience / hear everything that happened. So that was kind of cool as a way to like catch you up if you wanted to be caught up, for sure. But yeah, like in terms of like, I'm just not far enough in the story, honestly, to say whether it had to be tied in or not. Batman is definitely very central to the Suicide Squad story. Pretty early on, you get the ability to hear enemy comms, which is basically just Batman. So he's almost like a narrator at that point. So, I mean, he is very central to Suicide Squad for sure.
Cool. Yeah, and I know there's a whole like parallel universe thing that with the DLC they're doing and, you know, bringing back an alternate Joker, which looks not great, but I mean, I'm one of those, like going back to what I said, like, I think that I can choose to stay away from this game without being like, oh, no one should play it. Like, I think folks, if they want to check it out, they should check it out. It sounds like there's some fun there, but I guess
I think there's some fun there for sure.
Yeah. There's just a lot going on. I'm curious to see how the DLC stuff or the post-launch stuff reminds me a lot of Avengers. It was very ambitious. They announced we're going to have free characters, free expansions, and, you know, kudos to Rocksteady. They've announced, you know, 3 post-launch packages as opposed to Avengers, which had 1 and some characters in Spider-Man. I'm curious to see how it goes. I know personally, having not bought the game, like I'm not supporting, like, financially what they're trying to do with free content, and there are battle passes and all that stuff, but like, it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Cause it's all villain based, right? It's not like you're not going to get to play as Batman, even if there was maybe there's an alternate evil Batman. I don't know.
Maybe.
Probably.
Who knows?
Oh, there is in this game, but I mean like a Joker, or like a Suicide Squad thing. Anyways, I'm curious to hear more when you've kind of gotten a bit further and killed more of the Justice League.
I'm kind of at the point now where I think I'm going to my first major boss fight. Like I said, I had to go and redo some missions and, you know, all the connection issues and stuff. So like, it's been slow going for sure. I think I've played like hours wise what feels like quite a lot, but I haven't made a whole lot of progress. So I'm going into what I think is going to be my first major boss battle. So, I think I'll probably know a little bit more after that. So I'll definitely let you know how it kind of all shakes out in the end, probably in the next couple of weeks. But I think it's definitely one of those wait for a sale moments, but don't overlook it. There's something here, in my opinion. Which is what you're all here for, right?
Of course. Yeah, no, it sounds great. I am in wait for sale mode, I think, as soon as it kind of had a rocky launch.
Completely valid. It's definitely not. I don't think that I would pay full price for it again. I think I should have waited for a sale. But I wanted to play something new. So I wanted to give it a shot. And speaking of playing something new, I'm going to make this really short and sweet. Don't play Warcraft Rumble. It's terrible. I finally, so this was announced at BlizzCon. It's the, it was made available at BlizzCon. So November last year. And I downloaded it, but never booted it up, never played it. And then I needed something like quick, easy, whatever. And playing Hearthstone was just taking too much time. Again, demanding daughter. And so I was like, okay, these like Rumble matches are, 3 to 4 minutes. That perfect. I just need something quick and easy. So I was like, I'll finally give this a shot. Not to mention playing that gave me a card back in Hearthstone. So I'm like, okay, the Blizzard universe is all tied together. I'll just like, let me just open this up and see what it's about. So I will admit, at first, I thought it was pretty cool. I was like, okay, this is kind of neat. You like build your little lineup of what units are going to be available. They just, you put them in whatever lane you want them to go down, and then they, fight automatically. Like, this is, I don't play a lot of like mobile stuff. So like, I know that this is like a whole genre of games. Like, they're not reinventing any wheels here. But I don't play a lot of mobile games. So it was like a novelty to me. And I was like, okay, so this is pretty cool. And then to buy new units, you get some coins for defeating all of these bosses. I was playing my way through the campaign. It was really cool. And then I stopped getting coins for defeating bosses. And I was like, huh, Well, I was like, I had bought like three or four new units, and I was thinking it was a pretty good pace for, you know, trying to build like a thematic army. And I was like, okay, I'm really enjoying this. This is pretty neat. And then all of a sudden I wasn't getting coins anymore. I was getting other stuff through the campaign of like, I got like some upgrade currency and some other, I got like four different types of currency, which always makes me angry. And then I was like, well, I want to buy more units. There's a unit in a shop that I want. Like, how do I buy more units? You give them money.
Oh.
I was like, okay. And I think like you might be able to get coins through PvP, but I don't really want a PvP. What I was having fun doing was playing through the campaign, but it seems like PvP is really what I need to go and do now. And I'm like, I don't want to interact with that at all. Like, I was enjoying the campaign. The campaign was cool. But yeah, so basically I'm at the point now where they've enticed me enough. It's so predatory. They've enticed me enough that it's like, hey, now that you've had a feel for the gameplay loop and now that you've gotten to buy a couple of units, how about you give us money? Like, we're going to stop giving you currency now. And it's just like, ugh. It's super, super predatory. Like, don't play it. Don't play it. It's not fun enough to justify any of this crap. So, yeah, stay away from it. Honestly, like, really and truly, it has like kind of sort of a fun gameplay loop. Like, it's okay to kill time, but yeah, no, it's super, it's like, this feels like a mobile game from like 2015 before everybody got super mad about monetization. And it's like they took everything that pissed off consumers and put it in this game. Like,
wow.
There are limited time good deals in the shop, and like, just, oh, it's the worst game for predatory monetization I've seen in a long time. So yeah, stay away from it. Don't download it. Don't play it. It's bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is what happened when Blizzard takes way too long to develop a game that's design is stuck in, as you said, 2015. And I feel bad. I should have warned you. I had played this, and I bounced off of it in a way that was like, you know, I'm not a big fan of Clash Royale, and this is definitely like a take on that. And Warcraft characters being in it was not enough to keep it going. And as you said, it lays the give us money on pretty quick and pretty heavy. So,
yeah, I was really, really disappointed. So, yeah, don't touch it. And speaking of connection issues, same thing happened with Warcraft Rumble. Is I would like tab out to go and check the like, I have an app on my phone for our baby monitor camera. And so like I'd tab out to go check on her and I come back and it would do the connecting to Battle.net again. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh,
so brutal. Yeah, I had connection issues all over the place this week. So yeah, Warcraft Rumble, don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Ugh, gross. It was awful. Boo, Blizzard, boo.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's my short and sweet review. Definitely wanted to give a shout out though to our patrons this week, Daniel, Ben, and Void. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. If you like what we do here and you want to support us, you can head on over to patreon.com/thegamersin. Supporting us over on Patreon allows us to provide such services as the TGI Game Club. All of the past games that we've played are available in an archive on our Discord. You can go to bit.ly/TGI Discord for that if you wanted to play any of our old Game Club games. But yeah, we're going to do another Game Club sometime after our spring break because there's a lot of new stuff coming out that you guys want to play. But we are open to suggestions. So if you guys have suggestions or games that you want to run, please do let us know. Again, all of our archives of Game Club are at bit.ly/TGI Discord. And if you'd like to support the show, it's patreon.com/thegamersin. That brings us to layoffs and lawsuits. We do have other news this week, but I mean, what started off as a joke is sadly very true. So we have an update from the story where Nintendo was suing Yuzu creators. They are now going to pay $2.4 million in damages to Nintendo and are no longer developing the Switch emulator. So we talked about that lawsuit a couple weeks ago. And the funny thing is, I saw people tweeting out that there were already new emulators available. So, like, I mean, I get it. I know why Nintendo would want to protect their IP. But yeah, I don't know. These, they're not going away. I don't think like Nintendo's ever going to be able to get control. Like, the cat's already out of the bag.
I think that, and I mean, even when it comes to Yuzu, it was open source, so like anyone could fork it and
fair,
build their own slice of Yuzu. I think one was even like called like New Yuzu or something. And
Yuzu?
Yeah, maybe. Like, I think we talked about this last episode, and I think it comes down to the fact that Nintendo can point specifically to their Patreon, making money, early access.
Specifically because of the access to the game. Yeah. Breath of the Wild? No. Yes.
Tears of the Kingdom.
Tears, right.
Yeah. And, I don't think, do I think that if Nintendo wanted to and could, if they could get rid of all emulation of all their games, they would do it. Like, they would Thanos snap all emulators out of existence. If they had the Infinity Gauntlet or whatever the Nintendo equivalent would be, it'd probably be all the magic stones in Zelda. Come on, Jocelyn, help me out here. What would it be?
Well, I don't know.
The Triforce, I guess. We'll just go with the tried and true, the Triforce. I think they would, but you know, that's not the reality we live in. And I think that Nintendo sort of looks at the folks that are taking advantage and doing a bit more than just offering straight up emulation. And I think this one had enough going for it that the company was just like, yeah, like the quick turnaround. I thought this would go a little bit longer, but it literally had wrapped. If we had recorded last week, normal time, this had wrapped by then. So
yeah,
you know, this news is already old. But what's interesting here is that because the company that made Yuzu was also responsible for development of Citra, which is a 3DS emulator, that has also been sort of deleted from their websites. Like, so Citra and Yuzu are no longer available for download. And will Nintendo get their $2.4 million in damages? Probably not. Like, they'll get whatever the company had, plus whatever assets, and you know, but they aren't, I don't think they're getting 2.4 million. They're getting what they want. They're shutting down this thing they don't like. But yeah, it was a quick turnaround. I think it was because there was enough on Nintendo's side, and also Nintendo, we got to acknowledge that Nintendo being a billion-dollar company has, you know, lawyers, fleets of lawyers. Whereas I think an emulator making $30,000 a month does not, maybe has one lawyer. So the odds were not in their favor to try and fight this, especially with, you know, the early access to development builds and stuff like that, that allowed to play more recent games. So yeah, but I don't think this stops emulation. Like, I think emulation will continue to be a thing. I think there are Switch emulators still out there, as you were saying, and I think that Switch emulation will continue to be around, but I think this sends
maybe
a message
more carefully in the future.
Yeah, this sends a message to, you know, I've watched, so because I was doing a lot of work with the Amernic handhelds last year, I started following Retro Game Core on YouTube, and he does a lot of like guides and stuff for emulation, and he had a really great video specifically talking about this situation and how he approaches Switch emulation is basically running backups of his games to sort of benchmark hardware, because obviously the Switch having an emulator is going to be like sort of the high mark of performance for testing out hardware. So that's sort of how he sort of approached it. But you know, at the end of the day, you're still running current hardware, bypassing encryption. It's a whole situation that is like, if this were 5 years past the Switch being done, like, I think it would be a different conversation. But this was a Switch emulator that was in active development 6 months after the Switch launched. And yeah, it led to this moment. It took Tears of the Kingdom to kind of, you know. So it's done. It is done. I don't think we're going to see a bunch of lawsuits coming from Nintendo against emulators. I think this was the one they could look at and be like, we have enough here.
They wanted to prove their point that they could. Don't make them.
Yeah, Exactly. So it'll be interesting to watch. I'm sure other emulators, specifically Switch emulators, are looking at this and being like, okay, we need to approach this a bit smarter and roll back to, you know, emulation as a way of playing your games on different hardware and preserving access, I guess, if Nintendo yeah. were to shut down the eShop, which they've been known to do. They have done that. So we'll keep an eye on this one, I guess.
And we unfortunately have more layoffs to talk about. EA laid off 670 people, which was about 5%. So less percentage-wise than other layoffs. But 670 people. And they're moving away from future licensed IP.
Yeah. So we just talked about Star Wars.
I know. And that's kind of the one that's like a big question mark, right? Is Star Wars, they're still going to make the Last Jedi one? Another Jedi one?
No, the movies kind of ruined that. There was a Last Jedi. I think that part of this news was that they canceled Respawn's first-person shooter Star Wars game.
Right.
I think that EA is looking at, because again, like when you use someone else's IP, there's a whole license thing involved and you're losing money just by making someone else's thing. You have to sell more copies in order to make the same money.
So
I think this is like the layoffs is a bigger deal here, and this, you know, people are losing their jobs, but saying you're going to focus on more internal IPs, like what is that? Like BioWare hasn't put out like a hit in a while, so in terms of IPs, is it sports and BioWare, like,
and Sims?
Not, I guess, yeah, but it, yeah, Sims for sure. And they have a Sims, whatever they're at now. I think
Sims 4. They're just keep putting out expansions for it, but yeah, it's still Sims 4. I think they may have announced a Sims 5, but yeah,
it was like early. And are they calling it Sims 5, or is it just called The Sims again?
Well, yeah, it's the next one. But it's still years out as far as I know.
I guess it's just, this is sort of a common thread with these layoffs.
Oh my God. Sims 4 came out in 2014. So it'll be 12 years after four that they're going to do 5.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I mean, they're due up. So
yeah,
they have like 300 expansions to that one game, but
yeah,
they'll sell them all to you again. I think this
Anyways,
one is like,
but yeah, that's one of their own IPs.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got some stuff, and I think that if Dragon Age, which is supposed to launch next year or sometime soon, if that one lands like the rest of the BioWare stuff has, I think there will be like, there'll be issues, more issues with EA. I think that they're struggling right now. And I think when you look at EA's portfolio, like, Star Wars was like kind of their big hit. You've got Respawn's Star Wars, and the Star Wars strategy game that Respawn's working on is still active. They confirmed that. It's just this first-person shooter that got and I mean, you know, maybe it's too close to Fallen Order style, like, so they decided to like, let's do a strategy game, but let's keep our Jedi series going type thing. So a lot of folks have focused on the aspect of like EA commenting on games that have been canceled and moving away from licensed IP stuff. But then they have Star Wars and Marvel games still in active development. They're also working on an Iron Man game, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to tell. Like it's like CEOs talking about stuff and it's like, what are you even saying? Like, when are you moving away? In 5 to 10 years, once all these games are out? Like,
yeah, or you know, like immediately.
Yeah, like, are you just gonna build sports games after this, or are you gonna, you know, get BioWare back on track? Like,
which, like, are sports games even their IP? Like, don't they have to pay a licensing fee to like NHL and Major League Baseball and NBA? Like,
yes, yeah.
So, I mean, do they, like, I guess technically, like, the game is their IP, but, like, none of the branding is.
Yeah, and they have, in the past, if they can't come to, an agreement with a licensee, like, I think their soccer game is just soccer. You know, it's like...
yeah, it's FIFA, not FIFA anymore.
Yeah, like, it's generic soccer game number 12 or something, so... It's possible. I guess it's just, you know, you look at the way they announced these layoffs and it's totally an EA move to be like, we're laying off this amount of people, but we're also going to distract the conversation with the fact that we're canceling games. Similar to what Blizzard did, like they did that like yeah. whole cut, but then also canceled games. And it's like the survival game being canceled kind of took over the conversation, not from a layoffs perspective, but from the loss of this Blizzard product that we'll never get to play. And I think there was less focus put on the layoffs. And I think like this is a twofold thing where they're like, oh, we're also not going to make licensed games and we're going to cancel one Star Wars game.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
It's kind of a distraction. Like if they had announced this on a Friday at 4 p.m., it would have been the trifecta of like PR spin. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We've also got some changes and some sales going on. Embracer is selling Saber, who developed Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. So they're going to become their own private company of about 3,500 people. So, I mean, that's good that they're not just canceling and firing. They're selling, at least. So maybe some stuff still going to come out of that studio. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, like I hate to see Embracer, you know, being bailed out by the people they bought, in the sense that like Saber basically like we are jumping off this sinking ship and we're going to pay you to let us go. Mm-hmm. Feels like rewarding the problem a little bit, but I am happy that, as you said, these 3,500 folks are going to hopefully be able to keep their jobs and continue to build the games they were working on. They'll still have a relationship with Embracer, I'm sure, just through their publishing, but they're not as tied to this whole fire sale, like fire or sell type thing. So,
yeah. Same thing for Toys for Bob, which is the Skylander folks who were ABK people are going independent. So they'll be their own indie game studio now. I haven't played any of their stuff, I don't think, because I never got into that, but they're the ones that like do the figurine stuff, right?
Yeah. Lately they had a lot of projects with like bringing back older franchises from the Activision portfolio, working on Spyro trilogy and the Crash Bandicoot trilogy, as well as the new Crash Bandicoot game. And those were received very, very well. And again, like in my mind, it seems like a loss for Microsoft to not do everything they can to keep this development studio under their wing. Like it feels like a loss for them. But a big win for Toys for Bob if they are able to sort of exist as an independent studio and build sort of their own IP.
Yeah, they did talk about a kind of a partnership still with Microsoft, right? So they're responsible for their own destiny, I guess. Sure. but yeah, they said that they're exploring a possible partnership between the new studio and Microsoft. So independent, but friends, still friends. They're breaking That's up, good. But they're still friends.
Friend zone.
Yep.
You know, friends... Friends with contractually obligated benefits? I don't know.
Yep.
I guess. It's an interesting way to see companies. Like, this is what we talked about every time we talk about layoffs is, like, is there not a more creative solution to the problem that is not a problem at all? It's just shareholders wanting more money. Like, let's acknowledge that. Like, outside of Embracer, which is, like, a company failing – but with Microsoft, they're a trillion-dollar company. They can afford to keep developers actively developing.
Yeah.
So this seems like a solution that, I guess, lets Microsoft show like a change in the balance books, but keeps these folks employed and working at their studio and not having to relocate. Like, I want to see more creative solutions to these issues or not have these issues at all and just, you know, find a way to... to keep on going. I don't know. Yeah. I know something's got to change, but firing a bunch of people is not the way to go.
Agreed. And yeah, we also got news out of Warner Brothers this week saying that basically talking about the quote unquote volatility of AAA console games and how they're going to lean into free to play and mobile. And after my Warcraft Rumble experience this week, this news just makes me throw up in my mouth. And especially when like their last, well, I guess technically WB was the Suicide Squad game that we talked about this week as well. But like you're saying this coming off the heels of Hogwarts Legacy, which regardless of how you feel about Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling and that whole controversy, that game sold 22 million copies. It's one of the most successful games of all time. So you're saying that wasn't enough money for you? Like, I'm so sick and tired of these fucking companies, Ryan. Honestly, it makes me so mad. Like, what the hell more do you want out of us, your consumers, and out of your devs? Like, they make a game that sells more than any other game, and you're like, too volatile. I think we better just go for free-to-play mobile.
Like I said, it goes back to...
I hate them.
There needs to be more creative solutions, and these headlines of like saying things like, you know, moving away from future licensed IP, like yes, the AAA console game space is volatile when you spend a bunch of money and you don't sell. Like, it goes back to the Square Enix problem where everything was a disappointment to them because they spent more money than they made. Mm-hmm. And that's just the cost of development, and not every, like, even Spider-Man 2 like sold a crazy amount of copies, but then Sony's saying like we haven't broke even yet. Like, you know, that's a $90 game in Canada.
Yeah.
And sold millions of copies. So like, I get it. It's tough to make a big game, and you have to find creative ways to make money here and there, and I think that's what Suicide Squad was doing, although it's a design trapped in 2018 or whatever, like for mm-hmm. live service games. But I don't know, it's not, saying these things is not the solution, you know, like mm-hmm. I think Hogwarts Legacy is a game that was built on an established IP that they own, and was built as a single player experience with no microtransactions, sold a bunch of copies, did really well sales-wise. Like, you'd think you'd look at... Do they look at that as, like, an anomaly and not an example? Like...
Yeah. The thing that I don't understand is, like, if they're saying we're spending more money than we're making to make these games, like, then why are you making them so big? Like, couldn't you, like, pare down your vision by 10, 20% and save yourself some time? And then your game makes more money, like, relatively, you know, to its cost. Like, I don't understand why everyone feels that they have to have these, like, ginormous open worlds and all of these big, huge, long quests and everything else. Like, if you could just pare it down a little bit, then, like, wouldn't that just be better? Like, isn't that a good way to, you know, like, develop a good game that's just a little bit smaller in scope? I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's the other side of the volatile coin of, like, you know, from an economic side, it's volatile, but also from, like, a consumer side is that there is a vocal minority that will squawk if a game is less than X amount of hours. And
which, like, I get, if you're going to charge me $90 for 10 hours, I'm probably going to have an issue with that.
Sure.
But if you're going to charge me, like, $90, tell me a good story. And, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a middle ground.
There is,
like, a lot of these games, like, they take so long to come out, and then a lot of, like, side quest content never lives up to the main quest, and then it's like, okay, technically, yes, I did have an extra 15 to 20 hours of side quest, but they were garbage, so, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think
there
big companies...
has to be a middle ground, in my opinion. There has to be, and the middle ground is not mobile free-to-play bullshit.
No, because... I think that relies on, like, a small percentage of your player base paying for everybody else. And,
yeah,
you know,
and do you really, like, how many times, in my opinion, how many times the question is, how many times can you go back to that well? Can you say, like, okay, we as Warner Brothers are putting out Game of Thrones mobile and Harry Potter mobile and Suicide Squad mobile and Batman mobile and Mortal Kombat mobile, and like, at some point people are just going to be like, okay, we're done with your like reskinned mobile crap.
Well, and you know, Warner Brothers has some really great properties, and they have talked about focusing on those properties. Like you said, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings was them. It might not be them anymore. I might be confusing it, but definitely all of DC, Mortal Kombat. Like, it'll be interesting to see. Like, what? But I think they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they go full mobile, they get a little extra money. They have to deal with like the negative aspect of that. They go to a. I would personally like. I look at Nintendo as an example of like they build games like Tears of the Kingdom for $90, which is this huge. Giant world, you know what you're buying. But then you have a game that's $80 that is like a focused Kirby adventure. You know, no one really looks at Nintendo games and like, this has got to be 200 hours or I'm not buying it. You know, you buy it for what it is. And I think that's because Nintendo has really focused on like, this is our product. Don't try to compare it to other things. Like, you're paying $80 for the Mario Odyssey experience. You know, the Tears of the Kingdom.
Whatever that may be. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no like lines of like, well, we really want people to, you know, buy into the marketplace of, you know, Banjo-Kazooie and Smash Brothers. Like, you know, even there, they had DLC fighters that were like priced really well. So I don't know. Warner Brothers isn't the one that's going to figure this out. And it won't be EA either. I think it will be smarter companies that like maybe even Ubisoft might like. Ubisoft, I think, has kind of tried that a little bit with, you know, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, and Assassin's Creed Mirage lately, which are like smaller focus titles that are technically budget.
That's what I mean. I had no problem paying for Mirage because it was phenomenal. It was great. It was perfect. It was exactly what I wanted. It was pared down and much smaller than the Viking one, Valhalla. And I enjoyed it way more. It was so good.
Yeah.
I don't know. And and I would pay full price for that because that's an experience that is pared down, was amazing, had a good story, you know, like had stuff to do, but wasn't overly crazy. Like, that was fine. I wasn't sitting there going, well, Valhalla is 10 times bigger. Like, if anything, I was like, oh, thank God, Mirage is 10 times smaller.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, in the age of subscriptions as well, like you have an opportunity to try it for like a fraction of the price. And I think Ubisoft's trying to be creative with access to their games, but they also put their foot in their mouth by saying Skull and Bones is a quadruple A experience. Like, these are all lines that, you know, PR teams make up to try to like capture the headline, and we do know better by like bringing it up here. But I think you got to call bullshit out when you see it, for sure.
Okay, let's move on to some fun stuff.
Yay.
Frostpunk 2 has a release date in July, which is very exciting. Birthday present for Jocelyn. Hooray. We're not going to talk about what birthday it is, but I'm very excited for Frostpunk 2.
It's the 2. Frostpunk 2 birthday.
Yes.
We all celebrate it, really.
Yep. But yeah, so Frostpunk 2 is coming. I'm very, very excited. We almost played the board game a couple weekends ago. And so we watched a how-to like startup video on YouTube. It was an hour long, just the setup. I was like, okay, I don't have this in me today. I'm sorry. We're not playing this. We're going to play something else.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, I do have the Frostpunk board game, but I'm excited for Frostpunk 2 because, you know, the computer does all the setup for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to be really good. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Day one Game Pass. If you pre-order, I think, the deluxe edition, you can get access to their closed beta, which is starting next month. So I assume Jocelyn is going to give them money as soon as possible.
Very, very likely. That's a good bet.
No, it looks great. I honestly love the first one, and I can't wait to play the sequel because it's just different. It's a unique experience. There's not a whole lot. I know there are other games like it, but this is the one that I really latched onto. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
And then there was, well, March 10th, Mario Day, there were some announcements, although most of it, I think, was stuff we were already expecting or stuff we'd already heard of. There was nothing really crazy new except for the Lego teaser, right?
Yeah, the newest was the Lego teaser, which they're going to do Mario Kart, which, you know, I saw a bit of, like, writing on the wall for that because they had sort of unveiled a kart, Bowser's car or whatever that you could buy. It's out there now.
Oh, okay.
and you can put Mario into it and it comes with a Bowser as well, but it's not like the digital Bowser. It's just a Lego Bowser, but it sounds like they're gonna do, like, I mean, it just opens up like a whole new arena of what they can do, like all the different cars that they have and all the different characters, and it'll be interesting. I mean, my kids are kind of disconnected from it. They still don't understand, like, what new sets come out, and I don't show them the trailers, but I feel like this Mario Kart one would be like, got to show it to them in snippets, as opposed to like, look at this like huge line of Mario Kart that costs probably hundreds of dollars. Like, I'm not making that mistake.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was some other stuff, like they confirmed that the next Mario movie, I know you were probably excited about this, will be out April 3rd, 2026.
Mind the Mario movie.
I know. I'm just poking fun. I think that they do the Nintendo thing of, like, not saying it's a sequel, but, like, it is a new Mario movie that will expand the world. It's like, it's the Super Mario movie 2.
It's the sequel. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't
sugarcoat it. Come on.
Exactly. Just give us the news. But this kind of explains, like, where the Nintendo Direct official went. Like, they kind of had a bunch of release dates for their two remakes coming out. So Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door remake is out May 23rd, and Luigi's Mansion 2 is out June 27th, which kind of, like, makes us ask, like, okay, so we've got first 6 months handled.
Yeah, everything that we know that is coming is going to be done by the end of June. So what happens in the second half of 2024?
Yeah, because everything else is kind of like earmarked for 2025, the new Pokemon thing.
Yeah.
Zelda's done for at least two, 3 years, although there was talk of maybe there being like a remake of a 2D game or something, like they're due to have something like that available. But I guess we'll see. I mean, I assume Nintendo will have a June Direct like they usually do. Although we said hopefully that about February, but
yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, let's wrap this up with one more, because we've got, I don't know if you watched the Fallout trailer. They released a second trailer here, and it looks fantastic.
So. Yeah, honestly, I didn't watch it because I didn't want too many spoilers, and I don't know how much I can be spoiled since I don't actually know that much about the universe. So, like, any little Easter eggs or anything in the trailer probably won't mean that much to me, but I am really looking forward to watching it, so I decided to actually stay away from the trailer, but that is coming on April 12th. So a month today, we'll be able to sink our teeth into it. And I think it's going to be pretty good. It, like, from the first trailer anyways, it looked really good. You watched the second one, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think the second trailer gives us a better idea of, like, the overall world that the Vault Dwellers are stepping into as they leave the vault. And it relies less on the video game aspect of it. Like, I think the first teaser was like, look at how we built this show based on your video game. This one is more about telling the story of the world without relying on you having played the video games, I guess. But because I don't have a lot of experience with Fallout, and watching these trailers, like, okay, I'm a little more excited now. And I think they've done a really good job adapting it. But all the episodes will be available April 12th, so you'll be able to binge it. And I don't know who the bad guys are, but from what I've heard in the Discord, like, that's kind of par for the course when it comes to Fallout. Like, it's all just kind of, like, not great. It is the post-apocalyptic world, so that right. kind of makes sense, you know? I want to avoid, like, the Walking Dead tropes of, like, everyone's good except for this specific group of people this time around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then swapping them out every season, no matter where you set the show, there's always a bad guy. And a clock tower. so I don't know. I'm excited about this. It looks like we're continuing the trend of great adaptations.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So again, that premieres on Prime April 12th, so a week from today. Very, very exciting. If you would like to join the conversation about anything we talked about tonight, head on over to bit.ly/TGI Discord. That's also where all of our archives for the game club are. So go and join the community. There's a lot of really cool people over there. You can also visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at Joss Plays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. And remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.